When do you think a marriage is irretrievably broken? You know, that term they tend to use in court. When does that happen?
When you've tried everything. You've given your best effort, and it doesn't mean you need to walk away angry. It doesn't mean that the relationship is going to be over, because quite frankly, most of the relationships have children, have extended family, and that never ends. And so the way I look at it, and my job, is to not hurt your family, but to bring your family to a new place, because you're always going to be a family.
Welcome to Dr. Sex Fairy, America's top-rated sexuality podcast. I am Dr. Kaval Bava, America's favorite sex doctor, and I am here to transform your life. I delve deep into topics surrounding sexual health and relationships, and today we are embarking on a journey into a subject that is both sensitive and crucial for understanding human relationships, divorce, and why marriages fail. 56% of marriages end in divorce. As a sexual medicine doctor, I see relationships in all their colors, from happy couples to ones that are anything but. When a relationship is suffering, sex suffers as well. It is hard to generalize and say what comes first, the chicken or the egg, but we know that sex and relationship health are integral to each other. I witness firsthand relationships that are falling apart and the aftermath of divorce. There are many lessons to be learned from these stories. Today, we are taking a closer look at the complex dynamics that lead to divorce, the common reasons couples find themselves at odds, and most importantly, what steps can be taken to resolve and even avoid these issues and foster healthier, more fulfilling relationships. We will also discuss how you can navigate divorce in a way that minimizes pain and drama, especially if there are children involved. Joining me today is Stacey Mullins, a distinguished attorney with extensive experience in marital and family law. She is a partner at her Boca Raton law firm and is a Florida Supreme Court certified family law mediator. She has been named top lawyer more times than one can count and has won multiple awards. She is a philanthropist and author, and I must add, my dear friend. She is just the person to help us navigate through these complex issues and questions. So grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine, find a comfortable spot, and join us as we embark on a candid and enlightening discussion about divorce, relationships, and the path to greater intimacy and understanding. Welcome, Stacey. Thank you so much for coming on the Dr. Sex Fairy podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I am delighted to be talking to you in this setting for once.
That's true. Very true.
It's different.
Very different.
So tell me, lack of intimacy, money, and lack of family support are three main reasons why marriages seem to fall apart. What do you see happen most frequently in your practice?
That's actually a really good question. I think, and if you put it in a context of, let me ask you this question. If you had an employee working for you and the employee just stopped giving their effort, what would happen?
They'd get fired.
Exactly. And what happens in a marriage is really not that much different. People tend to stop giving the effort that they need to give in order to have a successful marriage. They go to work every day. They know that if they don't give 100% of their effort, they might lose their job. But they don't seem to see that same outcome in their family relationships. And they tend to not put in the effort that they need to. They figure they show up on Monday, they're going to have a job. But what happens is they get fired. And that's what I find mostly in what people tell me, is that they just stopped trying. And I always say to people, if you would just put 50% of the effort you put into your job, into your marriage, you have 100% opportunity for success.
I love that. I have never been asked that question before in this context, and you are so right. Because if we looked at our marriage the way we look at a job or our career, I think fewer marriages would end in divorce. You're 100% right.
We assume. We get up in the morning, we go to work on Monday, and we assume that we come home Monday night, our spouse is going to be there. But if we stopped putting in our effort a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 years ago, we may have gotten fired.
Absolutely. What do you think people tend to overlook in their marriages?
I think people tend to overlook the importance of communication. It's just easy to go through your day and the stresses of life, and children get in our way and work gets in our way. And people tend to not work on their communication as much as they should. And I think that's something that if people spent a little bit more time doing, and quite honestly, therapy, the best time for couples to seek therapy is when things are good, so that they can learn how to have those skills so that when things get a little bit rough, they have the skill set in order to get through that rough patch.
That is so great, because I talk on this podcast about preservation of intimate health, how you should be taking care of those things before you have a problem. And I love that you just said that about relationships and therapy. How many of your clients tend to get therapy before they come to you?
A lot do. Most people, when they come to see me, I always inquire, have you given this the best effort? Have you sought counseling? Most will tell me they have. Some will tell me the spouse won't. Can't clap with one hand. So therapy is an absolute, I think, wonderful opportunity for people to explore if they couldn't get back to where they once were. And we all think we can do it on our own, but the truth is we can't always do it on our own. So therapeutic intervention, I'm a huge supporter of.
Now, you see more relationships fall apart than the average person. Do you think that the average marriage can be saved?
Absolutely. I think if you once had shared that passion with the commitment to work and with the right professionals involved, I think you can get back there. I really do. And I have one story where a husband and wife fell apart, and they had young kids, they had stressful business, they owned a restaurant together, and husband moved out, moved in with another woman. And that's when the divorce started. And then the husband's father died, and the husband and the wife had to drive to Jacksonville together. And that's when they realized this was my forever person. And I can't tell you how much it warms my heart, because this was probably 15, 20 years ago, that I see them still on Facebook and they are happy as ever. And so I do believe it can work.
That's amazing. How many of your clients have you seen actually get back together?
A handful, not many, because truthfully, by the time they get to me, things are really at a place where they just don't feel that they can go back to where it was. But it does take a lot of work. So I would say in my career, maybe two, maybe three times, that's actually happened.
When do you think a marriage is irretrievably broken? You know, that term they tend to use in court. When does that happen?
When you've tried everything. You've given your best effort. And it doesn't mean you need to walk away angry. It doesn't mean that the relationship is going to be over. Because quite frankly, most of the relationships have children, have extended family, and that never ends. And so the way I look at it, and my job, is to not hurt your family, but to bring your family to a new place, because you're always going to be a family. So when people look at their children, I always say to people, don't you want your children, when they're walking across that stage and they're getting their diploma, to look out in the audience and see mom and dad sitting next to each other? That's not always possible, but I believe if two people really truly put the best interests of their children and their extended family first, it is possible.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
When mom and dad can be present on those big occasions together, and the children don't feel torn apart.
No question. And listen, divorce doesn't make good people bad people. It doesn't make good parents bad parents. But it also doesn't make bad parents good parents. It just gives bad parents an excuse. So if people go through divorce because that's their last and only option, they can have their children can grow up to be the best versions of themselves, as long as they put their children first. But as I said, divorce doesn't make a bad parent a good parent. Just gives them an excuse See, look what happened to little Johnny because we went through a divorce. No, look what happened to little Johnny because you're not a really good parent. You're not present for your child and you're self-centered or whatever it might actually be. But I think that people going through divorce can come out the other side and there is a light at the end of the tunnel and they can be very healthy and the family can be very healthy.
It breaks my heart to see children weaponized. And it happens too often.
It does happen, but not as often as you would think. In other words, in my practice, I would say most every one of my clients put their children first. It's the unusual one that doesn't. I don't personally stand for it. So perhaps those clients don't stay with me long term because that's a behavior that I will never participate in. It's sort of as a medical doctor, you have an oath, right? To do no harm.
Yes.
As a lawyer, I have a similar oath, and it's to do the family no harm. And so my role in ending the marriage, so to speak, ending the partnership or the business relationship, is to not hurt the family.
Are there any alternatives to traditional divorce that you have seen?
There is. There really is. So there is what's called collaborative divorce. And I personally am collaboratively trained, and we have a number of lawyers in South Florida that are now collaboratively trained. It has a very big presence in Central Florida, and it's really just kind of making its way to South Florida. And now we have an entire statutory chapter on collaborative divorce. And it's really an opportunity. It's not where people are running, you know, walking down the hallway, holding hands and skipping. It's not that. It's hard work, but the idea is to involve the two parents or the two spouses in their divorce more than ever. So it's done through, in essence, a team approach. So there is a lawyer for each of the parties. There's a facilitator who tends to be a mental health professional. Not that they're there to give mental health advice, but they're there to manage the process and at times manage the personalities and sometimes manage the temperature gauges. And then you might have a neutral accountant if there are financial issues. And there are team meetings where everybody is involved in the team meeting. And so the two spouses are really integrally involved in making decisions. So the research has seemed to indicate that these divorces result in far less post-judgment litigation because the decision wasn't cast upon them by a judge. It wasn't perhaps forced upon them, perhaps by their attorney. It was made in a team approach. So that's one opportunity. Another opportunity is through the mediation process. A lot of people will want to try to mediate their cases before getting into litigation, which is a tough thing to do without attorneys because a mediator is ethically prohibited from giving legal advice. So if two spouses come into the mediation process having not spoken with attorneys before, they don't necessarily know what the law provides and what they might be entitled to. So it's a little tough to do without attorneys, but the sooner that a case can be sort of funneled into the mediation process, I think the better opportunity the case has to get resolved and clearly will be far less expensive for the family.
Let's go back to one of my previous questions about why people tend to get divorced most often. How often do you think sex directly causes divorces?
Well, it's very interesting the way you phrase it, that sex directly causes the divorce. I'm not so sure that that's what causes the divorce. I think it's a symptom of what's going on in the relationship. So I hear time after time, and whether it's a husband or a wife, will come to me and part of their story, because they want to share their story, is they haven't had intimate relations with their partner in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, whatever it may be. I personally believe that the emotional connection is what fuels the sexual connection. And so when you stop working on your marriage, when you start taking that for granted, and you start to lose that emotional connection, what comes next is the sex.
Mm-hmm.
The other, I guess, fact or anecdote that people will share with me quite often is infidelity. And I feel the same way about infidelity. Infidelity is not what is wrong with the marriage. It's the symptom of the marriage. It's what led that person to look outside the marriage for whatever reason it might be. So it gives a good excuse to the spouse that was not unfaithful to be angry and to be mad and to feel betrayed. But in reality, that person may very well go on to have relationships similar to that which they are leaving because they spent too much time focusing on what the spouse did to them and not what their role was in the breakdown of the marriage. I'm not suggesting that the person that was not unfaithful caused the person to go out and be in, have an affair. That's not what I'm saying at
all.
No,
I understand exactly what you mean.
Because I realize it kind of sounded that way. That's not really what I mean. What I mean is that it takes two to make a marriage and it takes two to break a marriage. And you're doing yourself a disservice if you sit back and you say, we're getting divorced because my husband had an affair.
Because history has a way of repeating itself.
It sure does. And unless you take a step back and look in the mirror and say, where did I go wrong in the marriage? Where did I not give my 100%? Why did my spouse feel it necessary to go outside the marriage? And those are kind of the stories I hear over and over again. And I'm not a therapist, but having done what I do for as many years as I've been doing it, I hear so many stories and I see so many patterns. So I try to share with people because I become friends with my clients. I enjoy my clients. They are sharing with me the most innermost personal details of their life. And I'm not a therapist. I'm a lawyer. But having had that experience, if I can share with that particular person what I've learned from so many before, and maybe things might be different for them down the road, then I've done something really good.
You are a good person and you are a very good attorney. So yes.
Well, thank you.
You do both. I tend to function as a therapist in so many ways myself. Because to be an effective sexual medicine doctor, when they come to me with sexual dysfunction, again, it's seldom the sexual dysfunction by itself. What else is going on? How is the relationship? How are things at home? Is there a lot of strife over one particular issue? I have to ask those questions. And you won't believe this, but one of the most telling questions is actually about masturbation. I ask them, do you get hard when you masturbate? And if the answer is yes, I ask, how often? If they say all the time. Yet 5 minutes prior, they told me that during sex with their spouse, they have a difficulty getting and staying hard. Now you see there's a bit of a problem.
Well, I can tell you that is not a conversation that I typically have in my practice.
Thank God.
This is true. That one has not come up.
You know, it's just one of those things where to be really effective, one has to go above and beyond and ask the right questions. And I think that being an attorney, you do much the same. Being a good attorney, you do much the same.
It's about listening. Mm-hmm. So in my past life, I had a partner that I worked with for a short period of time, and he brought in a divorce case. He didn't do divorce. And so he sat with me in the initial consultation for about 30 minutes, and then he left. And later that day, he said to me, I have to ask you a question. How do you make it look like you care for so long? And I said, because I do care.
Imagine that.
You can't do what you do and what I do if you don't care about the person. It will eat you up. Because I can't imagine being able to attain the best result for you if I don't know what's important to you. Divorce is not cookie cutter. Every family is different. Every parent-child dynamic is different. And unless I know you and understand you and what is important to you, because what's important to you may not be what's important to your spouse. And sometimes we can actually achieve a result where you both feel like you won because you both got what was important to you. It's not always the case, and it's not always possible, but sometimes.
You know, I've heard about this form of co-parenting called nesting. And to me, it sounds like my idea of hell, where the couple is sharing the home off and on, and the children live there permanently. How does that work in your opinion?
So I've seen people do that on a temporary basis. I've never seen anybody do that on a more long-term basis. It's not practical. On a short-term basis, it might be. I think what happens is parents really give the home more importance in the eyes of the children than it really is. It's really about the parents' own insecurities. I find, from my experience, that the children could care less. They could go live in a box as long as they're with their mom and dad in their box and they have their appropriate level of electronics. Other than that, they don't really care. And so this idea of nesting, think about how it plays out, because life moves on and mom gets a boyfriend or a girlfriend, whatever it might be. And so what, mom now can't ever have relationship with that person when she's with her children? That doesn't make any sense long term. That's not realistic.
Seems dysfunctional.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I said a few moments ago, every family is different. And what works for some people, you know, I've had people where the children go back and forth every single day. To me, that's incredibly disruptive, but it works for that family.
So let's have you spill the tea. Now is the time to tell me some spicy info. When you're sitting with your friends over a glass of wine, how often does your divorce radar go bing, 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 bing? Trouble in paradise.
Well, if all my friends listen to this, this is going to be a problem. But I will tell you, it does happen. And when it happens for me most is when I see a spouse being incredibly disrespectful to their spouse in my presence. And that happened actually pretty recently. And I came home and I told my husband about it. I said, this really bothered me. Because if that person would speak in that manner to their spouse in my presence, then I can only imagine what's happening when no one else is around. And that's not good. But no, I don't pass out my card.
They know where to find you.
Yeah, they know where to find me. No, try to stay away from close friends. That's not a good place to be, to represent anybody in close friendships.
Trouble waiting to happen.
Yes, yes.
When you think back about prior cases and clients, which ones broke your heart?
Wow, I can think of a couple. Always the silver hair or gray hair divorces, as we call them, which are couples that are in their 80s. I had one recently where he was 94 and she was 88. And he just announced one day he wanted a divorce and she was beside herself. And her biggest concern was who was going to take care of him. His daughters didn't live in the state and she was devastated. And I don't really know what he was thinking. And I partially think it was that he didn't want her to have to take care of him. I don't know, but that one really made me sad. And another one was a young couple, young family. Both of them were as awkward as they come. They were perfect for each other in so many ways. And something so silly happened, and the wife ran with it in such a way that she could never roll it back. And unfortunately, that marriage ended in divorce. And to this day, I truly always feel bad about that because I really felt like they were perfect for each other. They were a good family, but they could never go back.
So sad.
It is. It is.
You have a lot of stories. Have you ever considered writing a book?
Me personally, no. But I will tell you, 50% of my clients come in and say to me, wait till you hear my story. I'm going to write a book. And I say to every one of them, the book's been written before, and unless your story has something to do with farm animals, nobody's interested.
You know, I once had an Amish man on this podcast, and he told me a story about one of his friends who had stood on a 5-gallon bucket and decided to, you know, get it on with a horse.
Oh, geez.
The horse bucked. The man fell, broke a limb. The church found out. But apparently it wasn't something very different or surprising in his very Orthodox community. And that got me thinking, See what happens when you mention farm animals to a sex doctor, especially one with a podcast? So then that got me thinking. I wondered if the Amish were the only ones doing it. Come to find out, no. Even today in modern day America, bestiality is not illegal in every state. Imagine telling a lawyer that.
And so I need to be careful next time I say that, because they might say, well, my story does involve mm-hmm.
You have to be careful.
Farm animals.
And multiple countries even today have tourism when it comes to sex with animals. How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
There are countries that don't even have it banned at all. I mean, Romania, it's still legal.
So I'll be careful. Next time someone tells me that they're going to write a story, maybe I'll come up with something different.
Yeah, not
animals. About the farm animals.
Yeah, you be careful. So let's talk about prenups. How many of these kids coming to you actually ever signed one?
So a lot of, I see prenuptial agreements in kind of two categories. One is in younger marriages, primarily if somebody's coming from family wealth. We see that a lot. The next category is really second marriages, where people are now in their 40s or maybe into their 50s or even later. They may have children from prior marriages, and one has accumulated certain wealth that they want to set aside. And that's really the two big categories. Two young kids, 25, 28, 30 years old, just getting married for the first time, very rarely, because they don't have anything. So they're not really thinking that way. They don't think about what this is going to look like down the road if the marriage doesn't work out. Because quite honestly, most people go into marriage and they take those vows very seriously, and they actually believe until, you know, death do us part in sickness and in health.
But what a wonderful concept in theory.
It is. It is. And I heard someone earlier today say something like, this is the only relationship that you actually hope ends in death.
Yes.
Because the other alternative is that it's going to end in divorce.
Yes. This is the one case where that is absolutely the preferred outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my family, I grew up in a family where divorce just wasn't a thing. Culturally, Indians tend not to get divorced. And coming to America, it was a bit of a culture shock to me in many ways, including how many people had the concept of a starter marriage. And I never understood that. And I don't agree with that, because I don't think one should look at it as, you know, a practice run, a dry run. I don't think that's a good way to look at it, because that's just giving up before you even get started.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've heard that term. I've not heard that term, a starter marriage. I think that what happens a lot is young people get married. They get married in their 20s and they think they know it all. They've got it all figured out. And you really don't. You know, you maybe haven't been out of college very long. You haven't really lived in the world. And the person that you've chosen to spend the rest of your life with, you think you know that person. But then real life stressors come into place and you start to figure out, hey, you know, he watches Fox, I watch CNN. We might have some philosophical differences that when we were in college and throwing back beers, we didn't really notice. They really weren't important. And so that's why you see a lot of these younger people that get married, they talk about the 7-year itch. I don't think it's an itch like, I want to get out of this marriage and I want to find somebody else. But I think it's you start to get into your 30s and you start to have children and you start to have a career and you start to realize that these small differences that didn't seem important, these philosophical differences, political differences, religious differences, family background differences, all of a sudden they really start to become very important. And that's why I think you see so many of these young marriages failing. And that kind of takes us to second marriages. And I don't know statistically whether second marriages have as high of a divorce rate as first marriages. From my own personal experience of seeing it and what I do, I see a lot of success. And I see it because now we're later into our 30s, maybe into our 40s, maybe even into our 50s. And we really have a better concept, a better level of maturity to understand what is really important. What maybe the spouse I'm choosing in my second marriage is a lot like my first spouse, but we both watch CNN, we both watch Fox News, or we do come from similar backgrounds. I don't think that, I do believe, let me say it this way, I don't know that race is an issue, I don't know that religion is an issue. I think the biggest issue in having a successful marriage is similar backgrounds, family values, moral values. And if you have that commonality, I think you have an amazing foundation to grow upon. But if you don't, it's not to say it can't work, but I think it's very, very difficult, because if family is extremely important to you, but not to your spouse, your spouse perhaps didn't grow up in a functioning family, and so family's not that important. He is never going to understand why you would fly across the country for 48 hours to have a holiday with a family member, because that's so important to you. That will never make sense to that person, and it's hard to mesh those two.
Is it a sign of impending doom when a spouse asks someone for a postnup?
Ooh, probably. That when someone asks for a postnup, it's sort of like if someone says to you, why don't we do a trial separation? Basically, what they're asking you to do is peel off the Band-Aid ever so softly, thinking that if they do it slowly, it won't be as painful, as opposed to ripping it off. But it would raise a lot of red flags for me if somebody were to say, in the midst of a marriage, I think it's a good time for us to do a postnup. I mean, I do postnuptial agreements, and typically they'll do that because they are preparing for divorce. But it's sort of like if your spouse comes to you and says, you know, I have a really great idea. I think what we should do is have an open marriage and bring a third party into the bedroom. In my experience, I'm not sure what your experience is professionally, but in my professional experience, usually a week or two later is the call to my office. It doesn't help the marriage.
I see patients of all sexual orientation. I have monogamous couples. I have polyamorous couples. I have swingers. I have everything in between. I am not here to judge anyone, but I do think that monogamous relationships probably have the best chance of success.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess in what I do, I see the poor results. So typically there's trouble in the marriage, maybe there's trouble in the bedroom, and so someone has the great idea that if we invite a third person into our bedroom, it's going to spice it up. And that typically is not the result. The result is that whatever is brewing underneath that led to the difficulty in the bedroom and the difficulty in the relationship becomes exemplified, you know, or exaggerated tenfold. And I get the call. I'm sure there are people out there that can have different type of family relationships and it works. And I just don't know about it because of what I do.
The concept of infidelity is something that is another gray area. It's very subjective. I was listening to this attorney on YouTube talking about a client of his who went to massage places and got happy ending massages because he didn't want to cheat. And his wife had refused to have sex with him for about 6 years or so. He said it was better.
She's not been wronged, because I'm not going to judge whether what he did was right or wrong. I think most people might suggest it's not okay. You are stepping outside the marriage and you're having something that is so special between just two spouses. You're giving that to somebody else. But here she's missing an opportunity, because there is a reason that they haven't had sex for 6 years, right? It's not because he has erectile dysfunction. It's not because she's too dry. There's something brewing in that relationship that isn't being cared for. So it would be as if somebody had cancer, but they weren't treating the cancer. They were just treating the symptoms of the cancer. It's just going to grow and it's going to fester and it's going to metastasize. So I think that is stepping outside the marriage and wouldn't be okay with me, but I think she's missing that opportunity. And if that marriage were to end, unless she takes a step back and therapeutically figures out where the marriage went wrong, what was missing in the marriage, why was I not being intimate with my spouse for 6 years, such that he felt it necessary to do that. And that's one of those relationships where they might actually be able to get past it, because he actually was trying to not hurt her and do it in the most, I guess, compassionate way. Maybe it's not okay with her, no matter how he did it. But, you know, if you look at it from through his set of lenses, he's saying, I wanted to respect the marriage, but I had to do something. And being by myself, I guess, wasn't enough. But that would be an interesting one to see if they actually got into counseling and they could work through that.
So, do you have any parting advice, any words of wisdom for our listeners?
Yeah, I think what I would say is take a step back. The grass is not always greener. And go back to basics and really put the effort into your marriage that your marriage deserves. And you have a chance of success. Divorce is not always the answer.
Well said. There are many things you've said today that just made me pause and go, uh-huh. And I was almost late asking you a follow-up question. This is great. Thank you so much for true wisdom. And thank you on a personal level for your friendship.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me here
today. You're a wonderful person. And I think my podcast is so much better because you came on it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I hope our conversations with Stacey Mullins has provided you valuable insight into navigating the challenges of divorce with grace and understanding. Remember, divorce is not just the end of a chapter, but also an opportunity for growth and transformation. I encourage you to reflect on the lessons shared today and consider how you can apply them to your own life and relationships. Whether you are facing difficulties in your marriage or relationship, or are seeking to cultivate healthier connections, know that there is always light at the end of the tunnel. If you would like to contact Stacey for advice, you can reach her through the link listed in the podcast description below. If you would like to see me as a patient or have a question or comment about this podcast, you can contact me through my website, drsexfairy.com. You can always give us a call or fill out the contact form on the website. There are several links in the podcast description below, including one for Dr. Sex Fairy supplements, which are proudly made in the U.S. Please subscribe to the Dr. Sex Fairy podcast on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and leave this podcast and me a 5-star review. Your subscriptions and reviews will help this podcast grow and reach more people around the world than it already does. For those of you on YouTube, do like this video, share it with your partner and friends, and subscribe to the Dr. Sex Fairy channel for more great content to transform your life. Until next time.